Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit rules. Wake up the silence, return.
This is Stephen Zimmer, and welcome to the latest edition of the Star Chamber Show. Of course, our lead-in music is the great Zero King, those guys out of West Virginia who just completed a three-song demo with Ben Wells from Blackstone Cherry. And so that Yay. Is the theme for tonight's show. And, oh, good, we have Michael with us. Because tonight, actually, we have just a pair of hosts tonight with our very special guests. It's just going to be me and Mike and Metal. And that's what it's going to be, I think, tonight. So
Rock on.
We are, I am excited. And so you and I get to kind of set down our book side just a little bit and get into some of the stuff that we love. And, of course, like I always like to say, Michael, I never am envious. I'm always happy for other folks, and they do great things. So I can't find the exact word, but I just think it's awesome whenever I see that picture of you and Lita Ford. And so I think that connects it all tonight. So, as far as it goes.
I've met one half of the Runaways.
but I know you and I both share a love for hard rock and metal. It's just a part of our world and writing. Yeah, because both of us write with music on. So
right.
So I know that this is a big deal to both of us. On the book side of things, I mean, things are going well. I mean, definitely a tidal wave of momentum going for Imaginarium right now. And, of course, I've probably told you a little bit, but, we just unleashed a huge array of panels and workshops and stuff. And like I said, we've got over 130 guests, and between the panels and workshops, over 140 sessions, and it's going to be massive and really excited. And we got possibly something cool happening with our Jeff Reddick, creator of Final Destination. I'm not at liberty to, talk about it yet, but just keep on the lookout for something involving Jeffrey and around for Imaginarium, just in time for Imaginarium. So it's going to be mega cool if the timing works. So, that's kind of that new thing. And, we've got, like I said, we've got, still 2 months to go. And then, of course, next weekend, and I'll be in Louisville for Phantom Fest helping out on the writer's side there. And I know you'll be joining me for Saturday doing a Stephen King panel. So that's going to be, that'll be fun. I get to finally catch up with you in person. And, it's going to be a good time. And, of course, that one's crazy because, they get 40,000 people and they've got a ridiculous array of stars. I mean, they've got the whole cast of Star Trek Next Generation and all kinds of Hollywood people and just nuts. I mean, so it's kind of, and of course at night it turns into one gigantic party in downtown Louisville. So, But you're coming in, for the Saturday, correct?
Yeah, I'm coming for Saturday, and I guess I'm doing the Stephen King panel. I guess my son and I are actually going to be on the panel for The Walking Dead. That'll be interesting. And he's kind of perspective of it. He's like, I need to read all the comics again. I'm like, okay, well, you know, whatever you need to do to prepare.
It's a cool blend of pop culture, and you know, they bring together so many different elements, and you know, it's going to be people from the world of film, music, gaming, comics. I mean, of course, we've got an author group there. I mean, it's going to be really, really cool, and it's one of the largest events in this region. I mean, definitely it's one of the largest events. I mean, it's last year's every bit of 40,000, 45,000. So yeah, it's gonna be a crowd. It's how I like finding my little nook to stay in when I'm there, because I'm not always the fondest of gigantic crowds. But I mean, it'd be one thing. I mean, to see 40,000 people at a book signing, of course, that'd be exciting.
you're always a target. You're always a target at this event anyway, because you've got the staff shirt on, so everybody's always stopping you for everything.
Yeah. The problem with wearing staff shirts at events is everybody thinks you know everything and can solve any problem,
right,
no matter who you are. So it's like a bullseye. I had so many people wanting me to attend to their photo op issues last year that I actually, on day two, I had to kind of turn my shirt solid in order just to be able to get through the crowd to do my job, you know, because it was like, you know, you couldn't walk 2 feet without getting assailed. It was funny. So, but yeah, we're getting ready for the events and everything. So we're going to be having some guests on here that pertain to Imaginarium, both on screenwriting and author sides. But tonight, I'm really excited because I actually discovered tonight's guests through Blabbermouth.net, which is a great kind of they're kind of like an aggregate news site for heavy metal and hard rock news, and they really help me keep up to date on what's happening out there. And I just kept on noticing these really good interviews with this fellow, and you know, he was having guests like Jeff Tate of Queensryche, one of my all-time favorite vocalists, and Rex Brown from Pantera, and I mean, good mix of guests. And I was like, this guy's great, you know. And I went over there, and they're not, you know, like I said, you know, I never worry about the age of a person. If they're good, they're good. But I just thought it was fascinating when I found out how young this fellow was, and he was doing just a fantastic job interviewing people, really pulling out stuff and getting these, you know, and it's tough sometimes to talk to personalities, and he, you know, he'd bring him into a very good conversation and doing a really, really good job. And he was on Blog Talk Radio at the time. And what happened is that, you know, his show became one of the top 300 on Blog Talk Radio, and which is awesome, because, I mean, if you know how many podcasts are on Blog Talk Radio, it's ridiculous. And so that's a real big honor. And so he got picked up by the CMS Radio Network in March of this year and has really taken off, and he's interviewed all kinds of stars like Rudy Sarzo, who's of course played bass for Quiet Riot, and Ozzy Osbourne. He's Michael Anthony, the bassist for Van Halen. He's Steve Stevens, Rex Brown, Tom Kiefer of Cinderella, Skid Row, former Skid Row singer Sebastian Bach. I mean, he's had Bumblefoot, who's a phenomenal guitar player, is touring with Yngwie Malmsteen, I believe, right now. But he's also the guitar player for Guns N' Roses too. I know he's doing some kind of guitar tour thing with Yngwie, but yeah, he's just interviewing all these guys and has a rising radio show. So I'm really, really honored to bring him aboard tonight. And at the ripe old age of 14, he's chugging, and he's also a musician. So we're going to get into that, but without further ado, I would like to welcome Miles the Shoe Schumann to the Star Chamber Show. Miles, you are now live and on the air.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me on your program today. It's always an honor when I get to be on the other side of the microphone for once.
Yes, you get to switch seats for a change here. And
that's
definitely a get to relax. And for us, it's kind of a break because, you know, we cover predominantly a lot of stuff dealing with the publishing and industries. We do cover some film, and we do have some music. I mean, we've had, like, Andy from Zero King, and we're friends with guys, you know, in the music world. And, you know, definitely give a shout-out to Michael Duncan, a great lead singer with Shattered Messiah and Thunder Tribe, a real good vocalist, friend of ours. And, you know, so we have a lot of music people around, then listening tonight to the show. I want to give a shout-out to Donna Smith, who I call the Metal Queen. And she actually stumped the trunk on an episode of That Metal Show on a Judas Priest question about which album they showed their original kind of, you know, that kind of symbolic logo on Sad Wings of Destiny. And she actually stumped the trunk. And so I want to give her a big shout out because I know she's listening to the show tonight. And we've got a lot of hard rock and metal people listening in because a lot of people love your show. And so we're here to talk hard rock, metal, and predominantly you. And I'd like to start with, yeah, just tell us how you got into, I never say age is a bad thing, you know, but obviously you started really young. How did you get into being able to connect with, you know, the star caliber host you have and develop your radio show being as young as you were?
Well, it's kind of a real cool story, something that started little and turned out to be one of the biggest parts of my life. And March of 2010 or October of 2010, I think it was. I went to a dinner, and we were down in the line, and you know, I knew that there were going to be some cool people at this thing. I got invited to go, you know, with some friends and my brother and my parents and everything, and I went and I sat down at a table, and I'm talking to this guy who's sitting across from me. And he has long hair, and he says, "So are you a musician?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm a bass player." And he goes, "Oh, no kidding, I am too. What are your favorite bands?" And I said, and at the time my favorite singer happened to be Ozzy Osbourne. And I said, I love Ozzy Osbourne. And he goes, "Oh, no kidding, I was Ozzy's bass player." And it turned out to be Rudy Sarzo. And so Rudy and I talked. Right, that's just ridiculous. I get goosebumps still thinking about it, but Rudy and I were talking all night, and we really hit it off great. And I found Blog Talk Radio a few months before that and was doing a show. I think I may have actually been doing it strictly about paranormal activities and stories and stuff like that because that's a real big interest of mine. And then I thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if I could get Rudy Sarzo to come on my radio show? So we became Facebook friends, and I had his number and everything. And so one time I called him, and he was like, "Sure, I'd love to be on your program." And so he made sure it happened, and he was my first guest. And then after that, David Fishoff, who's an amazing producer in the industry, called me and said, "I want to be on the show now." And then it just kept on going from there, and I was able to get guests through David Fishoff, like Teddy Zigzag from Guns N' Roses and Mark Hudson, who produced who wrote the song "Living on the Edge" by Aerosmith and won a Grammy for it and everything. And then from then on, as the years went by, I just started getting more and more guests on, and the show started becoming bigger, and it's just really taken off since then. It's been great.
Yeah, I mean, you had a lot of success even on when you were in the Blog Talk Radio stage, and certainly, I mean, like I said, that's impressive enough, but you got, you know, you've upgraded. I mean, you got picked up by the CMS radio network in March. So tell us a little bit about how that transition's gone and come about.
Well, that whole thing has been a great experience for me. And to say the least, how that whole thing happened really built me a big thick skin in the world because, you know, obviously people out there can be tough. And those the hosts of the Classic Metal Show, which is a very popular radio show, but they're notorious for ripping people apart in a way, and they're real funny guys. Though I'm good friends with both of them, and I listen to the show often now. But their names are Chris and Neely. And one time I got an email from somebody, and it was right before I was about to go on the red carpet at Bass Player Live, which was an amazing experience. And they said, "The Classic Metal Show has just done a review of your show with Jeff Tate." And so I went and listened to it, and I've never heard such bad things said about myself. But then it was more about it was more for the comedy, as I, you know, later came to realize, than actually ripping me apart, because they actually gave me a lot of props throughout it, you know, talking about how much they liked my radio skills and stuff like that. And so we got into a little, I didn't listen to the whole thing. I was done listening after I, you know, heard some very rude things said. And then we kind of got in a little war with them. And then one time I just, you know, sent them an email and was like, let's just put this behind us. I understand what you guys were saying. It was a really harsh criticism. Some of the stuff was over the line, but I don't care. Let's just stop this war. And they said, well, I don't think you listened to the whole thing where we really gave you some props. And so I went back and listened to it, and they really did. And then one night they asked me to call into the show, so I called into the show, and that was when they own the CMS radio network. And they said, we want to move you off of Blog Talk and put you onto our network. And so I said, yeah, sure. So I went on to it, and then I've started syndicating since then, and it's just it's been great.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I just have a couple comments that even tie into what I was attracted to in your style when I listened to Blog Talk Radio. I did happen to listen to that Jeff Tate episode, and as a hard rock fan, first of all, I respect it because I try to keep an even keel. I love, you know, a lot of, you know, groups, and I'm not so, you know, into one niche, or I don't take sides too much when things blow up between bands. And sure. I thought, you know, when you did the Jeff Tate interview, that was during the whole thing when, you know, and I'm not going to get into it, but obviously when Queensryche kind of split up and, you know, went to do
Queensryche.
And a lot of fans really got polarized and, you know, took camps. And I think that, you know, and I would suspect that some of the color of the review of your show that night may have been even affected by that, because, I mean, people get so heated. I mean, you can't put up a Jeff Tate article on Blabbermouth without getting some of the most absurd comments. And because I'm still a big Jeff Tate fan. I'm also a fan of Queensryche. And that's why I respected you, because you're one of the few balanced people that didn't, diss either side. You managed to really keep an even keel, and you did interviews with both camps, and you were, you know, one of the few that kept it balanced. And I just thought that was really cool, because you showed him, in my opinion, frankly, you showed a maturity level far, far above, you know, some others that I had heard, you know, that just get almost childish in the way they talk about, you know, things like that. And, you know, because, I mean, you know, we weren't there. We aren't part of that. You know, who knows, you know, every detail. And it's a sad thing, you know, because, I mean, when bands have fights and split up. But I just, you know, that's one of the things I thought was really cool. And you've managed to, you know, like I said, keep that kind of the right perspective as a whole, rather than, you know, kind of getting caught up in the petty stuff. And I've noticed that in a lot of your interviews and a lot of your coverages and things like that, you don't really get into the mudslinging. You have a tendency to stay above that and focus on the music and the true legacy and things like that. And how did you get to the point where you're able to kind of stand your ground on that? Because I know it's not easy, because, I mean, you've been to Blabbermouth. You see a lot of people get, you know.
Yeah.
How
absolutely.
How did you straddle that line like that?
Well, I mean, I started out, to be totally honest, I came to know Queensryche when Rudy Sarzo joined Jeff Tate's version, and then later on Robert Sarzo, who I'm very, very close with, and he mentors me, and we did some songwriting earlier today over Skype. He joined the band, and then I became a huge, huge fan. And at first, I didn't even bother going over and listening to any of the other stuff, because I had everything I needed right there with Jeff Tate's group and, you know, the live videos and the new album.
Right.
And I didn't even bother going over to the other stuff. And then one time a video came up, like on Facebook or Twitter or something, of the other group playing Queen of the Reich, and it was Todd LaTorre singing, of course, and it was unbelievable. I was really taken by surprise, and I was like, you know, even if I didn't want to like them, I like them. So I reached out to their publicist, and then kind of formed a relationship with them, because I interviewed Eddie, the bass player, and then at the NAMM show, I ran into Todd LaTorre my first night there, and he called me over, and I guess he listens to my show sometimes, and came to kind of know me through my Jeff Tate interview, my Eddie Jackson interview. And we talked for a while, and he said, you know, as much as, like, obviously he wants his side to succeed, he said he totally understands my personal opinion on it and why I am mutual on it and like both groups, and vice versa. I mean, Robert Sarzo completely understands it too. I called him before I did an interview with Eddie and said, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but I want to tell you that I'm going to do an interview with the other group. And he said, that's great. I hope they're doing well. So I think the fans have really, in a way, kind of pushed it in a direction that they'd like to see it go, like a real bloody battle. But with the inside of it, besides the whole thing that happened in 2012, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but
yeah,
the reason
right.
of Jeff's firing, I think that they all mutually, in a way, respect each other, and they just, you know, don't care to work together at all.
Yeah. Well,
so
I
that
like
makes
the best
it easier
for
me.
And I'm definitely going to, you know, buy albums from both of them, you know, going forward. And
right.
I hope Jeff really, you know, comes out, you know, the fantastic new project for his next thing. And I'm rooting for Queensryche to come out with a great new album. And I think what's going to make that transition a little bit easier is, though, is that, you know, with Todd, he does have a vocal styling. I mean, he's not identical to Jeff Tate, but he has vocal stylings that are very similar to Jeff Tate. So when he does the classic songs, you know, he does have inflections and things that do kind of resonate with the Tate era. And, you know, and I think that's why Ripper Owens, I think, was pretty successful for a while, Judas Priest, as opposed to when, like, Iron Maiden brought in Blaze Bailey, and you had a very different style of vocalist from Bruce Dickinson. And I think, you know, so I think sometimes when you're making a transition like that, I think it goes a little easier when you get a vocalist that's similar in style. And but not just Queensryche.
Well, it's like what's going on right now. No, that's fine. It's like what's going on right now with 3 Days Grace. You know, I love Painkiller. I think it's great. But you mm-hmm. hear the new lead singer sing some of the older stuff, and it just doesn't work.
Right, right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it's good though moving forward that you know when they finally made a decision that you know he's our guy, because now that you can write stuff that's in his range rather than him trying to do what's been done before.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely.
And you almost have the reverse of that with kind of Skid Row, because you have a singer, you know, with Johnny Solinger, I think, that's, you know, very different in style when he tries to go back and do the Sebastian Bach era, as opposed to, you know, what
mm-hmm.
Sebastian would do. And there's another case where you have some weird feelings between the camps. you get the sense that Sebastian would kind of go for it, though. And that's kind of the sense
yeah.
I got when I listened to the interview you did.
Well, I mean, I can't listen to I'm going to be totally honest. I can't listen to current Skid Row. It doesn't have the same feel for me. There's not that same special feeling to it. And I just think that at this point, I mean, I heard from one of the hosts of Plastic Metal Show the other day that he went to the Skid Row concert, and there were maybe 75 people there. And so, you know, that's one band that I just don't understand exactly what they were thinking when they made the choice for Johnny Solinger. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, he's good in his own right, but it's just not the same oomph that you need for that kind of stuff, like Sebastian brings
exactly.
to the table. And he's, of course, a great front man. And I don't know, Michael, did you get the new one, Give Him Hell? Did you get the?
I haven't. No,
I've
heard snippets of it, and I was kind of sitting back and waiting until both albums were out, because I was kind of, you know, seeing what direction they were going to go. And what I've heard of, you know, I'm the same way. I'm not really into the new Skid Row as much, but the new Sebastian album, I like what I've heard of it.
Yeah, I
loved it, and I played the heck out of it. And actually, it has another one of your guests. I just triggered a thought because it has Steve Stevens
right.
I believe, on several tracks on this one.
Yeah, and
I mean,
John 5 has been on my show before, and I think John 5 wrote a song on it.
Yeah, and then they had Duff McKagan, I believe, is on it. And he has kind of like a little bit of an all-star cast on this new one. And I know he's frustrated with the sales a little bit on CD sales, and my heart goes out to musicians. I mean, us authors, we're facing a situation where we're just now getting what music and film people have had to deal with in the market, because they're moving to a Netflix for books model right now, Spotify kind of like model for books right now. And so we're just now, I knew about it, but other authors are just now waking up to the fact of how evil it is. But I know that Sebastian, I know he was kind of frustrated with the, well, I guess with the CD sales when the new one came out, but I mean,
that's
definitely one of the frustrating things I'm sure you hear from a lot of these guys, you know, with the just the way that the industry is now with CDs.
Well,
Spotify,
you know, I read somewhere that last year was the first year that vinyl outsold CDs since the introduction of CDs.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's saying something.
Surprise me.
You know, I from a lot of these guys, the publicist will send me the album to listen to before I do an interview with them. And I'm not saying anything's set up yet, but I got the new Judas Priest album in the mail today, and that's the first time I've ever gotten an album sent in the mail rather than them just sending it through email MP3s. But the quality is, in my opinion, much better, because I just cranked it up on a stereo today when I got it. And it sounds much cooler than just, you know, playing the MP3 from a laptop computer. So I don't have a record machine, but I imagine vinyl is three times more than that. So I just don't understand why, I mean, I guess because it's easier, but I just don't understand what the appeal of the MP3 is over the others.
Well,
yeah,
honestly,
I think
go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, I think it's just convenience and the fact that, you know, you can pay, you know, 99 cents or $1.99 for the one track that you want, which is why I think that album sales as a whole aren't doing well, just simply because now it used to be that oh man, did you hear the Pink Floyd album, or did you hear the Motley Crue album, or, you know, whatever, and people were listening to the entire album. I mean, I remember, you know, as you know, when I was in high school, you know, we'd go to the record store and just you know, just to get all the new albums for the artwork and the, you know, the liner notes and all the lyrics, you know, sometimes printed on the inside and everything. And so you go and the album cover itself was something to behold. It wasn't just the record, but you had all the all the things that went into the packaging. And now it's like you can download digital books sometimes with the CDs, but it's just not the same. And you know, it's like, you know, now it's like you hear, I mean, even with the last Black Sabbath album, it's like, you know, it's like I know a lot of people who downloaded God Is Dead, but did they download the whole album? You know, it's much more of a single oriented industry right now.
But I tell you what, you know, this is just a theory I have, but I happen to like vinyl, and I'm geeking out over the new Kiss reissues, because Kiss put out their entire catalog on 180 gram vinyl this past spring and summer, and it's just been heaven for me, because they even put the cool little inserts, so you can get the little Love Gun, cardboard Love Gun and Love Gun album. You can get the posters with Dynasty. I mean, it's the tattoo sheet, you know, with Live 2. It's awesome. And one thing I noticed, MP3 versus vinyl and stuff, is that the medium actually kind of affects how you kind of think about the music in a way, because vinyl, it does require that you kind of treat it with care. You know, you have to handle it, you know, with a little more care. You know, you have to, you know, and you change it out, you know, every 20 minutes or so per side. It requires you to put a little bit more attention to it. So I think it actually makes you kind of put your focus a little bit more on the music, as opposed to just flicking tracks on an iPod. And I wonder what that, you know, yeah, when you're talking about singles versus albums versus getting a sense of a band, I wonder how much the medium actually affects that just a little bit, you know, as far as that goes.
Right.
It's just a thought. But,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say I like the vinyl movement that's kind of going on now, because it's like, especially in the soundtrack reissues, because you've got a lot of limited edition horror soundtracks, especially, that are coming out with like vinyl that's like, you know, blood splattered or whatnot, you know, where you can only get it if you order, you know, because I've got some picture discs, you know, vinyl from back in the 80s that I always like to take around the cons and show people that that they used to do, and they can, you know, they just do so many cool things with that. And so a lot of people, you know, and now they've started offering, you know, like with the Pretty Reckless, with their last album, it's like you could get the collectible vinyl, but then you also got the, you know, the album on, you know, MP3 with it, so that, you know, you still had your digital version that you could put in your iPod or whatever, but you got the collectible vinyl too.
Well, that brings up a question, Miles. When you're talking to so many personalities on and off the air, with these interesting packaging that you see with bands and new releases and stuff, what is your sense of how bands are looking at selling music now and in the future, talking to them?
Well, I think that a lot of people are very mixed on it, at the fact that obviously they're not selling as many records at all as, you know, Sebastian Bach spoke his mind very clearly on my show about how he wasn't happy with the record sales compared to his Facebook fans. And so people are, I think they're happy that they have the internet to promote themselves so easily, rather than having a promoter, you know, go through so much trouble. They can just put it out on Facebook or Twitter and so many people will see it there, whatever they're promoting. But at the same time, it's ruining record sales. And so I guess, you know, so it's really, I don't even know how a lot of people are surviving, because there are some bands that aren't making very much on recordings and not making very much on touring, and a lot of these bands are just, you know, nostalgia acts going off of their past. But, you know, I don't understand how some of these people are surviving, but clearly they're doing it. I don't have the answer to exactly what they're doing different now.
Well, I'm curious on your take on satellite radio and Octane, because I know that I've discovered a lot of bands through Octane that, you know, you don't, you know, hear on traditional radio, and then I've gone out and, you know, searched for their website and searched for their Facebook page and gotten into their albums and whatnot. Prime example is one of my favorite bands right now is Gemini Syndrome, which, you know, I heard them first on Octane and went out and searched them out. Have you noticed that, especially a lot of the, you know, newer up-and-coming bands are reaping some benefits from satellite radio?
Yeah, I listen to Ozzy's Boneyard and Hair Nation a lot, and I haven't really listened to much of Octane. But, yeah, I mean, it's real cool because there is a lot of new bands, like you said, that that are getting airplay. And then there are some old bands that didn't necessarily make it huge, like Hurricane, who, you know, Robert Sarzo and Kelly Hansen and Tony Cavazzo were all in it. And that band, they toured with some big guys like Iron Maiden and Stryper, but they never made it very huge. And then I'll be listening to Hair Nation and I'll hear an old Hurricane song come on. And that's cool because, you know, it's like the people that didn't know about them in the 80s that are listening on SiriusXM get to hear them now in 2014. So I think that SiriusXM is satellite radio is great.
Yeah, I love the new Stryper album. And
oh,
the new Stryper
album.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
you interviewed Michael Sweet too. Yeah,
Michael Sweet came on to talk about the Stryper album, and then he came on a second time to talk about his new solo album, which is also very good. Stryper is on their game, and Michael Sweet on his game big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned Hurricane. I just heard, I'm on to you this past weekend, as a matter of fact, because I love that song. I mean, I cannot not turn up the radio whenever that song comes on. I mean, it's such a good song. And but I actually thought,
they should have been much bigger.
because I thought Slave to the Thrill was a really good album, and it just hit right before that transition in the whole rock world with, you know, the incoming stuff from Seattle and all, and that just killed me, because, yeah, I thought, like you, I thought Hurricane was great, and I was kind of, I loved the kind of brother thing going on, because you had, you know, you had Carlos and Rudy and Quiet Riot, and then you had Robert and Tony and Hurricane, and I thought that was pretty cool, and
that made it really interesting. Now you get Rudy and Robert in Jeff Tate's band.
And I think phenomenal players. I mean, like I said, Robert Sarzo, I think, is people really need to listen to his work, because he's just a phenomenal guitar player, and I've liked everything he's done. And I hope people go back and check out those early Hurricane albums, like Over the Edge and Slave to the Thrill. Great stuff, and you can still get it on Amazon. It's, you know, in physical formats and stuff. So I mean, it's you can definitely track those albums down. So. But,
yeah, and Robert put out a really cool solo album, too, that I highly recommend.
Very cool. Yeah, what's the title on that one?
What is it called? It's called, the name of it, I just lost the name of it.
Because I heard it, too,
you know what it's called? It's called After the Storm, because it's like after Hurricane,
storm, yeah.
After the Storm.
Very cool. Because he's
incredible.
Such a good player.
Yeah,
definitely check that out. But you, sir, you are a bass player. So let's not overlook that. You're a rising radio star, but you've been hanging around and doing songwriting with some of these guys and going to, you know, events. And what's going on with you on the music front?
Well, speaking of Robert Sarzo, like I mentioned earlier, Robert and I wrote a song together this morning over Skype, and we work together whenever he's off of tour. And so I work a lot with him, and, you know, hopefully in the future, he's very encouraging of me to put that stuff out there. So hopefully in the future, once everything's recorded and written and everything, I'll be able to put that out there. And I will be forming a band in the near future. I was invited to join a band last year, and we were going to go out on tour, and they've been touring a lot lately. I don't think getting into that much, but unfortunately it didn't work out. So I've been like really hungry to get into a band. And so I'm in Maine on vacation for the summer, and then I'm going back home where I live in Connecticut right now, and then I'll be starting a band there. So between writing with Robert and starting a new band and playing with my brother and stuff, you know, music's a huge part of my life.
Aha, another famous brother connection coming up here. Sarzo's and then the Schumanns. All right.
Right. Yeah, I said to this morning, I said to Robert, he was talking to me, and my brother put a note up to my door, because this is his last door, when I was on Skype with Robert, and it said, we're going to be in the same Algebra 2 class this year. And I said to Robert, hey, Robert, my brother just left, or I was laughing at the note, and I said, my brother just put a note on the door that said, we're going to be in the same Algebra 2 class this year. And Robert goes, yeah, it's kind of like me and Rudy playing in the same band together, except you guys will be doing math and we're playing in a rock band.
Well, talk a little bit about the process of writing with Robert. Do you get a melody or a riff going, and then you just kind of build on that, or do you have like actual lyrics in mind?
Well, both Robert and I, we always have, what makes it work so well, you know, writing together is the fact that we're both always thinking of new ideas. And so I'll come in to the session over Skype and say, you know, Robert, I got this new idea. Tell me what you think of it, and I'll play it. And you know, the specific one today he really liked, and he was like, okay, what about, you know, this, we can use that as an intro. No, that as a verse. And he'll say, how about this for like a pre-chorus? No, I like that better as a chorus. And then we'll start going at it. And then, you know, I usually doing a lot of the riffs and stuff, and then Robert will start singing a melody, which he thinks would work real well. And then I always record it with a system on my computer so I can go back and listen later. And then, he leaves all the lyric writing to me, and, you know, then I have to come up with ideas, which is probably the hardest part of it, is coming up with the lyrics. And then, you know, eventually we just, we keep on working on it. And the specific one today that I'm really excited about that we started working on, I'm really hoping in the future that'll get to come out sometime, because that was a real cool song. So we work real well together.
What kind of style? I mean, in terms of how would you describe it in terms of the music style? Yes.
It's very, you know, it depends. I mean, we've written songs that are very funky. Like, I'll come in and I'll say, I'm feeling like in a superstition, Stevie Wonder, Stevie Ray Vaughan kind of mood. And then he'll start playing something. And then I'll say, I like that. And so we can be funky. Sometimes we'll play something that's kind of dark, and we'll kind of go from a dark song. But I really like upbeat music. And the specific one today, not very similar, but very influenced, and kind of has the same upbeat as Sammy Hagar solo era, like Can't Drive 55 kind of. So it's very
cool. Yeah, Lord knows we need some upbeat, fresh rock. I swear, because I'm a little dismayed sometimes when I listen to some of the new stuff out there. But, that's definitely cool.
Today my writing soundtrack was The Very Best of Dawkins. So.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No, I'm a huge Dawkins fan, and God, George Lynch is playing on all kinds of stuff now. I got the KXM release, which is fantastic, with Doug Pinnick of King's X and Ray Luzier of Korn. And my God, that album is a monster. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great album, KXM.
Yeah, and
I think George Lynch has a new thing coming out with Michael Sweet too, so he is all over the place.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's a combo, because with Michael.
Yeah, that is a real good combo.
But yeah, it looks like Lynch and Doug Pinnick's playing out a lot of stuff. I see he's on the horizon for some new releases and whatnot that aren't King's X. They're side projects, but yeah, he's doing a lot of cool stuff too. And yeah, it's kind of neat to watch. Before, I mean, they were always just entrenched in one band. But I'm sure that as you've been talking to all these artists, I mean, they started to kind of mix together and do with Sebastian's album and everything else. They start to mix and match quite a bit and do different projects together. Is that kind of an evolution, you think? And they're just not as worried about just being in one band, or what's happening? What's your sense of that?
Well, if you want to hear a real interesting thing covering that topic, then you got to listen to the interview I did with Doug Pinnick, where he goes into that a lot of these musicians are, barely getting by, these guys that were monsters in the 80s, but, times are tough now. And he says that really these supergroups, as a lot of people call them, are a fun way for the musicians to get together, but also good way to make money. And then, you look at a band like Chickenfoot, which was Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony and Joe Satriani and Chad Smith, I think. And they started from the bottom, as obviously they have their names to live off of, but they're an arena band now. And so it's a real cool way for these bands, for these different artists to get together and make some money. So I think it's real cool.
So actually, it's a little economic driven, and the result is that we as music fans are getting a ton of good stuff. So I guess it's
exactly.
A win-win.
It's a win-win.
Yeah. So that's very cool. And also, I think a thing that's kind of happening more is a very festival driven atmosphere, because we're getting a big one in October in our state, Louisville. We're getting a huge one with Korn and Judas Priest headlining on October 4th in Louisville. I can't forget the exact name of the festival, but it's huge. And I think Alter Bridge, I think, is playing, and it's going to be really awesome. And you see a lot more festival driven kind of stuff than you did in the past with single bands touring. And, I think that's, it's kind of maybe evolved a little bit out of the European scene, maybe, with Vakken and things of that nature. And now I think you're seeing a lot more of these massive festival kind of shows in the States. And how is that you think those are going to, you know, be successful?
Yeah, I think it's really great for both bigger bands that, you know, like, I'm trying to think of a perfect example. I guess, like, Great White. You look at Great White, who was big in the 80s, sold, like, 10 million records, and now they're, like, a theater club band. But then they get to go out there in these festivals and play in front of anywhere from, you know, 30 to 100,000 people. And then also it's a great opportunity for up-and-coming hard rock and heavy metal bands that aren't very well known. You know, there's all sorts of different competitions, like Battle of the Bands and the prizes. You get to go play at Rocklahoma in front of 20 or 70,000, 20,000 people, something like that. And so I think that the festival atmosphere is a great way for all these bands to get great, great press and acknowledgments for what they've done in the past.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping you would kind of take it that direction, because that's really the only way that I see that newer bands can really get good exposure in today's market. And because, you know, obviously, you know, it's not quite the same in terms of airplay and things like that, where bands get a chance to get exposed. It's more, you know, it's more of a word of mouth kind of underground kind of thing, if anything. And yeah, these festivals, I think they have, like for a band like the guys I was telling you in Zero King, I mean, they've, you know, I mean, for a band like that, I mean, it's one of the best ways for them to get out there and get some exposure. And but I also think that bringing together that many stars at festivals would does that make it, as far as you being a radio host and all, does that give you a good opportunity to kind of corral like a ton of them together to get tags for your show and get different things like that done, or catch up with a lot of guys too? I mean, I would imagine for a radio person, it also is a bit of a bonanza.
Oh yeah, yeah, no doubt. All those people are in the same place at the same time, it's paradise.
Yeah. Yeah, as I'm looking for, I used to know the bass player for Five Finger Death Punch when he had a band here in Lexington. We used to do a lot of all ages shows together, and used to, you know, I used to do some booking and promotion. And great guy, Chris. He's a great guy. He had a, you know, he had a really,
cool,
really good hardcore
too.
Metal band. Yeah, yeah, and I was so happy that he finally got his break. And but yeah, he's returning to Kentucky for this massive October show. They're gonna be here, and yeah, it's gonna definitely be a real cool thing. But I'm kind of curious to talk to him about some of the developments and just the way that music has, you know, the industry has changed, the way, you know, all kinds of things have kind of changed. And you know, and you know, I think you're definitely yeah, you've got a band and you've got a radio show at a very interesting time, or you know, I guess you're gonna start a band, but yeah, you're definitely into some brave, you know, kind of a brave new world in a way, because you know, there's not really a real certainty about everything, but I think
Go ahead.
You're fine.
I definitely thought about that a lot, and one time a well-known radio host in New York was talking to me and said, you know, you got to start thinking about what you're going to do if hard rock and metal dies out, which, you know, I don't see happening. But obviously I have other interests as well, and I've definitely thought about in the future branching off and you know, as well as still doing the hard rock and heavy metal interviews that I do now, as well as, you know, bringing in some of my favorite actors and comedians and stuff like that. And, you know, in the future, I definitely have lots of ideas of how to keep the show going, still staying
sure.
True to my roots.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah, because you've got, yeah, I mean, you're a personality, and you've got, you know, a very kind of biographical kind of style, you know, bringing things out of guests, and that's one of the things I think you're really effective at, is getting them to talk. Because I mean, I've heard interviews of other people, and then I hear them with you, and it really does seem that they calm down with you, and they really feel like relaxed, and they're not on guard as much. And they, yeah, what I mean, I know you can't share all your trade secrets, but how do you think you've had a knack for kind of breaking the ice with them, or do you have anything you can throw at us in that regard?
Well, I think the most important thing is to remember that obviously they're musicians and they have egos, but they deserve those egos because of their accomplishments, but they're also just regular people, so they should be treated like regular people. So it's, I always look at my style as trying to have more of a conversation rather than an interview, rather than, you know, like a Q&A kind of interview that you hear in a lot of different places. So I think they just get real comfortable when they think of it more as a conversation than an interview.
Right. Do you do any kind of pre-interview where you say, you know, what are some topics you want to discuss? What are some things that are off limits? Or do you just kind of say, hey, welcome to the show, let's go for it?
Yeah, I pretty much just say, hey, welcome to the show, let's go for it. Like, if I'm going to bring up a sensitive subject, then I'll gladly respect if they don't want to talk about it, but I'm going to try and talk about it anyways.
Right.
Yeah. and I've heard him time and again, and he does it in a really good way. I mean, he's gone into some areas that would be considered, polarizing on a site like Blabbermouth or something, but he manages to walk that fine line without it getting ugly, and the funny thing is he actually gets the artist to talk in a much more relaxed manner about those kind of topics, and so that's like I've always thought that's one of Miles's strengths, when I've listened to the show, and of course, I've listened to a lot of your shows, from the days you're in Blog Talk all the way up to now, you're only getting stronger. So, I mean, it's kind of cool to watch you. I guess I kind of came aboard during your earlier days, but it's
right.
As a fan of your show. But,
right.
And you said something about the future of hard rock and metal. Yeah, we ebb and flow in popularity with the public, but metal never really goes away. It's one of the enduring genres.
It's always there. Even if it's underground, it's always going to be there.
Well, it's the same thing with horror. I mean, when everybody's saying, oh, don't you wish you were writing horror back in the heyday of the 80s? I'm like going, well, there's probably more horror being printed now than there was in the quote-unquote heyday of the 80s. You know, it's just that it's a lot of it's smaller press and not by the big five, and the same thing is true with music. I mean, there's a lot of groups out there that are, on independent labels and putting out some some really fantastic stuff, but it's just not as mainstream as some of the other acts.
Exactly. And then there's the newer metal bands like Avenged Sevenfold that really made it to the mainstream success, even though they're a metal band.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I've been to. They just played here for Mayhem over the weekend, and every time they get out there, I mean, for everybody out there, if you've never seen Avenged Sevenfold live, you have got to see them live at some point because they they're theatrical. They get the fans involved, and they just go out there and they just put on one hell of a show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think you just tapped onto something, though. I think you did. It's a lot. I think that's one reason that some hard rock and metal has ebbed maybe a little bit. I mean, it's not going to go away, but I think the fact is that put on a good show, and a lot of bands overlook that, and the importance of putting everything you can into a show. Live, especially nowadays, where you're not getting the air support quite as much, and is very important. I think that's one of the reasons. Yeah.
And I remember listening to an interview with Alice Cooper where he was talking about how he would see some of the newer bands perform, and they were all about the image. And he would talk to him and says, where's the songwriting? Where's the song? Says, well, yeah, man, we're angry. I get that. But where's the music? You got to concentrate on the music. And I think that, if you listen to the lyrics and a lot of the newer stuff that's coming out, it's there's some deep stuff going on there.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, if you listen to a band like Ghost, I guess they're called Ghost BC now.
Yes. Yeah.
They're amazingly theatrical live and a great band to listen to, you know, recorded versions. So if you have great music, then it's just a plus when you're up there and put on a great show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I saw Ghost or Ghost DC live, you know, it was very polarizing because some people in the audience were like, if I cheer, am I like endorsing Satan or, you know, and then you've got other people, they're just, we love you, yes, rock on, you know, kind of a thing.
Right,
you know? So
right.
It was really cool.
Well, we've resolved that since I was getting into Slayer. I had to resolve that one a long time ago. oh man, yeah, I guess they got a new one coming out too, not too long from now. But
even people who were fans of Stryper still thought that they were going and worshiping Satan by listening to Stryper, who is a Christian metal band.
Oh,
right.
No. Yeah, then that fabled show that was supposed to take place was Stryper and Slayer, I guess, on the same bill. I mean, I can't remember all the details about that legend, but yeah.
Was that the Heaven and Hell tour?
yeah, that's what I said. I suggested to Michael Sweet, I said, you should take Stryper out and open for Marilyn Manson or something and call it the Heaven and Hell and call it the Heaven and Hell tour.
Oh man, that's too funny.
Well, I remember
back in the
80s when they were tossing Bibles out to the crowd and whatnot for the Stryper shows.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Well, that was when the original Yellow and Black Attack was underway. I mean, yeah, and they had
that. Oh, yeah. I think it was the album before In God We Trust that they were out. There were nobody really knew what they were. Everybody's like, what is this?
Yeah, I picked up on them around Soldiers Under Command. That's about when I picked up on them. And To Hell with the Devil and around that era. And then In God We Trust and... Yeah, they've they've got some good albums that never got a lot of airplay that came out later. You know, they continued putting out some music. And that's just one of the sad things about today's market is a lot of these bands have put out great albums even since, like even Dokken and so forth, and that people aren't even aware that some of these albums are out there. So, oh, man, it's tough to
get. Well, Stryper's latest album, No More Hell to Pay, is probably their greatest release to date, in my opinion. I think Michael Sweet feels the same. They really hit it on point with that record.
No, it's fabulous. It's fabulous. Well, we're coming up on just a couple minutes left, and so I wanted to make sure that I give you time to kind of talk to people about where they can find your awesome show now and links and all that kind of good
stuff. Thank you. Well, I'm very, very active on Twitter and Facebook, so my Twitter thing is at Miles the Shoe, MilesTheShoe. And then you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MilesSchumann, which is MilesSchumann. People always screw up the spelling. They put like a Y or they'll, you know, Schumann, but it's Schumann. And then I can be heard twice a day on the Music Discussion channel on Radio IO, which is, I think they're in the world, they're number 200,000 online radio sites, according to Alexa.net, which is an Amazon company that ranks websites by popularity. And so they're a very big website, and I recently just joined on with them, so I can be heard twice a day on the Music Discussion channel. And then I can be heard on the CMS Radio Network. You can listen online at cmsradio.net. Fridays, first at 11. Oh God, I got to make sure I'm getting this right. So first at 11 a.m., and then again a replay at 7 p.m. the same day. So that's every Friday. And then I'm on 95.7 The Panther, which is out of Villa Rica, Georgia. And that's 957thepanther.com. You can listen online Sundays at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So that's kind of
awesome.
But mostly everything can be found on Facebook and Twitter.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Miles. It has been awesome talking to you, getting a sense for just you. It's been great to actually have you as a guest. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me, guys. I'll come back on.
Take care. Have a good night.
It's always a blast. All right, thank you.
Oh, yeah, we'll have you back.
Rock on.
Take care. Good night.
Bye.